Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
Welcome to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. I'm your host, Roosh Williams, with my co-host, Zach Noble. Zach, how you feeling today? How's Minnesota? Seems
it's
cold.
It's cold. It's probably feeling like what Josh has got going up north, but I got my espresso happening right now and trying to survive off the two-year-old live and sleep. The kid beat my ass up last night.
It's nice and crispy in Houston. It's like 48. I walked my dogs this morning. Honestly, it feels perfect. But as you just alluded to, we have a guest on the show, none other than Mr. Josh Eberly, all the way from, I don't know what province of Canada, but somewhere in Canada. Josh, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Good, man. I'm doing well. I'm in Alberta. It is cold. I was joking this week. I was leaving work. And I wanted to have a beverage or two with some colleagues after work. And my boss was like, if your car sleeps in the parking lot, we'll just say it died. And we all laughed. And then I had a couple beverages. I went to go start my car and it died. That's how cold it is in Canada right now.
Oh my God.
Good times. Yeah.
So I need a little info here because I don't understand Canada. I'm a classic American. So where is Alberta?
Like we are west, second furthest west province. We're landlocked. We are Texas, Oklahoma of Canada, but cold.
Got it. Okay. Right. Close to Vancouver?
Like a 12-hour drive.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I thought Vancouver was west. Okay.
Vancouver is the most west.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Cool. That's where the Texas, Oklahoma part comes in.
So is it just cold year round?
No. Like our summers actually get quite warm. I don't know. Calgarians love to tell you that Denver and Calgary get the most sun out of anywhere in North America, but you feel it for that 3 months of winters are cold. So
got it. Okay. Yeah. So are people playing basketball outside? Do y'all play basketball indoors? Is there basketball happening?
Basketball is like a April till maybe October type thing outdoors. And then you got to find a why.
Got it. Okay.
What's all the right. dumbest question you get on the average day about Canada from NBA Twitter?
You know what? I was going to say not NBA Twitter.
Well, it's annoying.
Like doing NBA radio spots.
Yeah.
I'll always do a radio spot and I'll do like Hawaii, ESPN Hawaii, or I'll do like somewhere in Wisconsin. And they'll be like, yeah, Calgary. So you're from Calgary. That's right outside Toronto, right? I'm like, Toronto is like a 3-day drive, my friend. Like that's like asking someone from Portland if they're close to New York. It's just not, they're not close, my friend. Yeah.
Okay. All I know is, Toronto's like above New York, right?
Close too. Yeah.
Where's that? Oh man, I went somewhere. God damn it. With Montreal. Montreal's over there too on the east, right?
Yes.
Further. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
All right. I know a little
bit. The fur traders up there, man.
There you go.
Yeah, that is a pet peeve, man, because everyone's like, oh, you got a Canada flag. You're a Raptors fan. I'm like, I don't give a damn about the Raptors. I don't care at all, man.
Well, but you say this with the Raptors Vince Carter jersey framed and hanging over to
he's a player's guy. Let's be honest.
Vince is different, man. Vince is royalty. That's a different thing.
Okay.
You know he's a Mavericks fan, though, right?
Yeah, I know. I know. We've argued about this before.
Yeah.
which is honestly hilarious to me. Out of all the teams you're going to pick, the Dallas Mavericks. I have to assume that's because of Dirk. I hope.
Well, actually, it's because my mom's a flight attendant, and 6-year-old Josh got a Cowboys jersey, a Mavericks T-shirt, and that's just what it was. So
got it.
Do I wish?
I'm a, Rock- I'm a Rockets fan, but yeah. I had I still have a Jason Kidd Mavs jersey from when he was a rookie.
Okay,
I was big on Jason Kidd as a rookie. All right, man. So
let's start on the Mavs.
Huh?
Let's start on the Mavs. I got to hear this Jason Kidd experiment. What's going on there? How you feeling? Because I haven't heard too much feedback on where people are viewing the Jason Kidd hiring and where they're sitting on the feelings there.
You know what? I'll throw this out. I think people were very ready to kill Jason Kidd and say he was a terrible coach. And I think rightfully so, because the track record with Milwaukee and Brooklyn had been great. And I don't think he's done an amazing job in Dallas, but I think the problems in Dallas are not of his making. I think this roster's issues were this roster's issues before he got there. And in terms of, is this team playing a little bit harder? Is there more continuity? Do the guys like him more? That appears to be true. Do I feel like any of the promises made about taking the ball out of Luka's hands and playing a different style of basketball? And has any of that really shone through yet? No, not really. But at the end of the day, I think there was an assumption he was going to be a bad coach. And whether that's true or not is still, you know, up in the air, because can Luka be in shape? Can they find someone to secondary playmake for him? Can Tim Hardaway Jr. bring it on a nightly basis? Can Kristaps Porzingis stay healthy, bring it on? Like, all of these problems, if you will, were here before Kidd.
So I think you're right. I agree with the roster construction. They didn't really do anything in the offseason. They just added, like, what, Sterling Brown, Reggie Bullock.
Reggie Bullock, baby.
Yeah, it's an extended, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. So they didn't really do anything to the roster, kind of ran it back with, like, the whole heliocentric Luka type thing. And now they are 14-14. They're in the eighth spot, not promising. I think Porzingis has played okay, better than people would expect. But I think it's funny how Luka is truly fulfilling his manifestation as the next James Harden. I mean, he really is, right? Like, out of shape, playing heliocentric ball, and the questions about, you know, can they find a second playmaker? I think it really is going to come down to, and you said promises not fulfilled about playing different basketball, but I think the bigger question is it even possible, right? Like, does he know a different way of basketball, especially at this point? Like, dude, I say this all the time with Russell Westbrook, right? People fantasize and theorize, oh, if you can just get him to do X, Y, Z, it's going to work. But They don't understand that he's bigger than X, Y, Z. He doesn't know how to reduce down to X, Y, Z because it's in his basketball DNA at this point. And Luka is doing whatever he did the last couple of years, you know, 28-9-9 or whatever it was, phenom, right? Like, how does he come back down to earth from that? I think it's really difficult. So kind of expand a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you're saying is fair. I don't know if you guys roll the video out, but, like, I'm grimacing because it's true. And it's well noted that James Harden isn't my favorite player to watch play basketball. And you know what? When Luka started with Rick, and even though it was heliocentric, it was a lot different. It was a lot more give and go. There were a lot more handoffs. There's a lot more cuts. There's a lot more movement in the offense, even though he was ultimately deciding the same amount of possessions. We are falling into the same trap Houston did, which is live and die with one player who's not totally in the best basketball shape that he can be in. And I don't know that it's a winning strategy. And I really do go back to that Kobe interview with Jay, where he's talking about Harden. He said he just can't win a championship that way. Like, you win a lot of games, you can't win. And I think Dallas is in that situation. And to your point, I don't know. Jalen Brunson has played well. He's been one of the few bright spots for this team. I don't know how much you want to take out of his hands. I think Kristaps Porzingis is somewhat underrated defensively. Still not the guy they thought he'd be offensively. He's not, you know, a consistent floor spacer like they'd hoped he'd be. And to that point on Westbrook, Porzingis doesn't want to just spot up in the corners, right? Like, that's been a piece of content for a couple of years. Like, he wants to be more involved. He's not overly efficient when he's more involved. So they're in a bit of a tough situation. And I think the only thing I'd push back on is there was this hope that Luka being 21, now 22, like, there's this room to grow and accept coaching. Except everything you hear is that Luka is not overly interested in changing his style or chopping it up or changing how he plays based on what the coach is saying. So you know, that the Mavs might be headed down the exact same road.
He's been doing this since he was 15, 16, playing at a very high level. So like, that's he's 22, but he's already 5, 6, 7 years in of being like the guy, you know?
Yeah. He's 8 years of pro basketball. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And the Mavs cashed in their chips for Porzingis. I think that's the biggest issue. They've handicapped themselves because there's nowhere else to go. But what do you think, Zach?
So I disagree that Luka or James Harden could ever win with that style. I will always disagree with that Kobe quote, because I just don't think that neither of them have had the teams yet. I mean, James finally has the team now, but he's not that guy anymore. He's playing a different style of basketball. But for the Mavericks, if they're going to play this type of lineup, like a depth lineup and no top end talent, their assists have to be way towards the top of the league. They're 22 in assists right now. You would think their paces would be a lot better because they're fifth in 3-point attempts. And it's weird. I mean, their percentage is towards the bottom of the league. And so they're just chucking up a bunch of bad shots. And you'd think with the talent they have, they should be sharing the ball like no other. And so now, if they're going to play the way they are, if Luka is going to dictate the game this way, you got to go get top end talent. And who can they trade for that? You know, that's where it's getting tricky. I mean, what type of moves are to be made? So now you got to, I think, the only way the Mavs can truly get better is capitalizing on defense somehow. You got to try to find a top seven defense, is my opinion on it. So I said before the year that they were one of five teams that really needed to blow it up, and that was Kristaps getting him out of there. I didn't think it would ever work. And the first 10, 15 games, he was looking pretty decent. The team was flowing, and now it's back to where they were. And just going to survive on how good Luka can be and how hot the rest of the team is from the three. So in your estimation, Josh, what type of move could they make and how desperate are they for a move? Because I think they're towards the top of panic mode when it comes to somebody that needs to make a move.
Well, I think too, like credit to Maury and Houston, like they did bring in guys who could shoot the basketball a little bit. Like the Mavs are 25th and 3. Yeah, they're 25th in 3-point percentage. Like they don't really have off-ball shooters. They don't have clutch knockdown guys. And Tim Hardaway Jr., honestly, I think has mostly been a blessing given that the Porzingis end of that deal has not been what they've expected. But he's hot and cold and he's all around. And now they're trying him off the bench. Like Dorian Finney-Smith, Reggie Bullock, Sterling Brown, Kristaps, Maxi Kleber, like all these guys, they're not killer 3-point threats. So it puts a lot of pressure on Luka too, because now, you know, with the changes, he's not getting to line quite as much. Those assists that he's throwing aren't assists. Their offense is just totally out of whack. And I think you're right. And a lot of people who cover the Mavs and would love to see some sort of a major shakeup, I think. But the problem is, who wants Kristaps Porzingis? And like, what can you get? Like, you're constantly weighing, like, what if Kristaps Porzingis is healthy, engaged, and playing his best basketball for a playoff run versus the meager returns that I think you would get for him right now? And Jalen Brunson has played himself into like being at least interesting as part of that package. But I still don't know, like, what does a Kristaps Porzingis, Jalen Brunson package get you? And is that currently better than the ceiling of what you have?
Yeah. I mean, last thing I'll say about this is, you know, What will the performance be like if Kristaps Porzingis is doing his thing in a playoff run? I just don't think he's that guy. I mean, quite frankly, he's just not that guy. You know, like, yeah, he can help out. Yes, he can play well. Is he a number two on a contender? No, I don't think so. Jalen, it's funny too to hear Mavs fans tout like a Jalen Brunson, solid player, good player. It just reminds me of when the Rockets would boost guys like Daniel House or something like that.
You got to shake what you got.
I get it. I'm just saying, from an outsider's perspective, it's like that's the clearest sign that it's not going to work, this current iteration, right? Like, if you're relying on hopefully Jalen Brunson will break through and like take a leap and whatever. Tim Hardaway Jr., good player, but like streaky scorer. These are ancillary guys. You know, they need to be like fourth, fifth, sixth guys. And right now they're like second, third type guys because Kristaps is sometimes the second guy, sometimes not.
Well, so. I think Brunson's legitimately a good basketball
player. He is.
He definitely is.
I think him and Tim Hardaway Jr., if they shared he's the third guy in your offense role, whenever they're on the court, it's Tim or Jalen. you would be in a good place.
If you got another top 15 guy.
It's just that you need a legitimate, as Roosh said, second option on a contending type team. You don't have that. So it's this huge void.
I agree. So we'll wrap the Mavs up there. That's probably the most time I've ever given the Mavs on this podcast. Bless their souls. Is there anything that, you know, you wanted to kind of talk about? Any surprises, any hot topics that you personally had on your mind before I continue to direct the conversation?
Anything I had on my mind? Well, I don't know, man. I just before this, I saw that Trae Young is now in health and safety protocols as well.
Oh, I didn't see that. That happened today?
I just did a look. There are 65 players that are supposed to play on Christmas that are in health and safety protocols or hurt. 65. 65. Unbelievable, man. Like, I mean, obviously the NBA doesn't want to abandon the Christmas slate, and they've clearly been, you know, pretty adamant to this point that we're not taking a break, but this is getting pretty wild. I don't really want to watch Julius Randle shoot 25 times.
Rather watch Julius Randle shoot 25 times than watch like the Santa Cruz Warriors play for the Golden State Warriors on Christmas, you know, like.
True, I guess.
But it looks like that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. You know, I honestly don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what their plan is, you know.
Keep on keeping on.
I think it's fair for everybody because everybody's missing guys. So I don't think there's a ton of excuses to go around.
Except for like Utah somehow. Utah
and the Rockets, knock on some wood. Every team that plays the Rockets seems to have guys enter protocol, the Hawks being one of them. The Knicks being the other one. But so far, no Rockets have entered protocol. So I don't know.
Minnesota was good until Ant went down.
But so next up, man, I wanted to talk about, unless Zach, you got something?
I don't. Go for it.
I was going to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, man. They are surprising. They are number three in the East. They're one of the best defensive teams I think I've seen in a long time. And they're doing it. You know, Evan Mobley's been out and they're still doing it. And, you know, when they made the moves that they made preseason and they got Lauri Markkanen, they drafted Evan Mobley, they obviously extended Jarrett Allen, and they just went with like the dinosaur lineup. I was thinking, you know, I don't know how this is going to turn out. Obviously, this is kind of the antithesis of what basketball's become, you know, big and long and kind of moping. But they are, A, it's working. That is working. B, Darius Garland has taken a leap and is playing incredible basketball. C, Ricky Rubio is having, I don't want to call it a resurgence. I don't think that's right. But he's very playing very valuable basketball and contributing at a large level in like the classic veteran type role, and it's working. And it just seems, and also then it seems like the removal of Colin Sexton either has made them better or hasn't hurt them at all. So I'm kind of surprised with Cleveland, man. I you know, for a while I was expecting them to kind of be on the tier of the Wizards where they started hot and then eventually would fizzle out and kind of regress to the mean, but that's not what's happening. They're 19-12 and they look like an actual contending basketball team. So
like contending as in contender or playoff.
I mean, look, they could defend their way to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there was some sort of seeding where they got to avoid Milwaukee and Brooklyn, I could see that.
Well, they're third.
Play either of them. Yeah.
They're third. So if the season was to end today, they would play Charlotte in the first round. And if they were to win that, they'd play the winner of Chicago and Washington.
They'd have to get lucky as fuck and be, opposite of the other.
I mean, they could beat, look.
But I don't think they're beating Chicago either, but, you know.
They could. I'm saying they could defend their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, what obviously if they run into Lowry. Milwaukee and Brooklyn, it's going to be trouble. But, you know, are they going to win at all? I don't think so. But I'm just saying they could be one of those sneaky teams. They get contributions from all around. They've got tremendous.
The Hawks of last year is basically what you're saying.
Huh?
The Hawks of last year is basically what you're saying.
No, the Hawks were Trey was that engine that ran the Hawks. You know, everything kind of revolved around Trey. They don't have a Trey. Darius Garland's been playing great, but they don't have a Trey. But they just, dude, they defend like crazy. They're so versatile defensively, and they're kind of on one rope, and they can shoot. Just kind of that, like, I don't want to call them the 60 win Hawks. I think that's not a right comparison, but something like that, right? Where you're just like, how does this team keep doing it? And they continue to do it, and then they get trucked in the conference finals. But yeah, thoughts there.
Okay, I have many, many, many thoughts here. Preseason, I liked Cleveland a lot more than everybody else. Like a lot more. And I had
I saw you quote tweet this, I think, the other day. You boosted your old tweet.
No, Justin boosted it, and then I reboosted it. But anyway, but I had him like eighth. I had him eighth. I didn't have him anywhere near this high, but they were 12th in over-under for wins in the Eastern Conference heading in. And it's just, you know what? We focus so hard on players in the draft, and we talk about potential and ceiling, and then we never apply that concept to a team that's been drafting guys forever. And I think that was Atlanta last year, where like, yeah, they haven't put it all together, but they have a bunch of lottery picks that are all working to get paid. And like, there's going to be some growth. And I think Cleveland was in the right spot there. They needed shooting. They added Lowry Markkanen. They went big. They cover ground without giving up any height, or they don't give up any height while covering ground, which is whatever, however you want to put it. They're doing that exceedingly well. Garland and Allen are in the conversation to be all-stars. My thought, my way too far, this shouldn't matter. Why are you thinking about this? Just enjoy the season is, big men who cover space don't last.
Mm.
And I, you know, like Bam's not the same guy in space he was 2 years ago. AD's not the same guy in space he was 2 years ago. Clint Capella was like one of the best switchy bigs in the league for like 2.5 years. And then that just stopped. He just wasn't that guy anymore. And I wonder if this is sustainable, like playing this big Mobley and Allen 2-3 years from now. But like, what does that really matter? Like, that's just a down the line thought. But
are you saying that you don't? Are you specifically talking about Evan Mobley or Jared Allen or both?
I'm saying if either one of them gives up some of the mobility that we've seen this year, this probably doesn't flow as well as it flowed.
I think
I agree on all those names besides Bam. I think he's doing just fine, and Jimmy Butler in and out of the lineup never helps. He's the heart and soul of that team, and I don't. It's every team he's on. If he's not playing, everything just gets wonky. Saw it in Minnesota, Philadelphia, Chicago. He just demands everything on both sides of the court. But I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to say with Mobley and Allen. So you're saying like 2-3 years from now, this isn't that sustainable. Their defense they're playing right now.
I would say I have questions about whether Mobley and Allen is still the long time fit for the Cavs.
Because AD and Capella have been in the league much longer, and
for sure.
But Capella, I think his point about Capella is right though. Capella was elite, and then all of a sudden he was like, you know,
that's fine, yeah,
okay.
And I even think Anthony Davis's value as a switching big is somewhat diminished versus what it was, and now we've obviously the MCL, and we've talked about his level of engagement is all the time befuddling, but I just think that it takes a toll on bigs to cover the space they do at their body size, and I don't think you see it as long. So maybe I would reframe it as like, as much as they are surprised, like their window to do something with those two being an optimal fit might be quicker than people think.
I think a lot of their success has to do with Rubio, Chetty, and Love making a huge bounce back. Because they're doing this without Sexton, who, if you'd have told me before the season Sexton was going to miss all these games, they'd be 19-12 right now. I'd laugh at you. They haven't missed a beat with them, and
I feel so bad for that kid, man.
It's terrible. Well,
Jared Allen's, I think, like 22. Evan Mobley's 20, so they're young. So I think it bodes well for them, at least to the contrary of what Josh is saying. I think it bodes well for Cleveland that they got that the bigs they do have that are defending in space are young, but. Zach, to your point, I think it's just they're getting it from all angles. You know, it's not it's hard to pinpoint one reason that is causing or spurring their success, but they're getting it from all angles, dude. Like they have a multi-faceted attack defensively, both offensively. Like they're just hard to stop. They're a good team. They're a solid, well-rounded team. They don't have that, you know, superstar top 15 talent to put you over the top.
Yeah.
And if they did, they'd be a championship contender. But they're very good.
Maybe Mobley gets there though. I think Mobley could be that guy down the line and look at Garland this year. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think Mobley's got a top 7 ceiling. I really do. Will he ever reach it? I don't know. But what would you say his ceiling is, Josh?
I don't know. I don't think any of the comps like exactly fit him nice.
Right.
Like I don't know that he'll ever be a better two-way player than Anthony Davis. And I don't know what the hell is going on with Anthony Davis the last couple of years, to be honest with you. But like in terms of, do I see him being that talented or that effective at both ends? Probably not, but maybe like top 15, like in that conversation, like he's an all NBA guy for a few years feels possible.
My opinion has changed drastically on Anthony Davis the last year and a half. It's sad because he was on his way to being a top all-time talent, I thought. I mean, he can still get back on that track, but... Well,
I will say, like, a lot of the criticism of, like, how players played in the bubble, I thought was mostly fans just being petty. Like, your team didn't win, or your guy didn't do this, so it's... Their achievement isn't what it was because there wasn't fans, there was bubble ball, but, like, Anthony Davis is strongly making me consider that, because that shooting sample in the playoffs versus everything else that we've seen with LA is just, it's not even close. Like, it's like two different players entirely.
While we're here though, let me just say, I never want to see NBA basketball played in a bubble ever again for that specific reason.
We're trending that way. Shit. The Cavs might not have a team tonight,
man. Look, yeah. What Anthony Davis did in the bubble is the quintessential example of a player that doesn't do well, not well, but doesn't perform up to like high expectations under the brightest lights, all of a sudden getting some type of pass and just, you know, being able to hoop in like an AAU gym, you know, like, that's cool. That's fine. But we saw last year how much different it gets when you go on the road. That stuff matters, dude. It is sure. Indisputable that there's a psychological aspect and the travel component. Especially for a guy as big and lumbering as Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis, go for it.
I was just going to say, I'm not saying like, oh, the championship's not real. Although we could have that discussion, but it's definitely different than the rest of history. You know, it is, you can't argue that it's not different than the rest of history. It's its own isolated thing. Was the playing field fair? Yes, it was. Is it comparable to any other season in NBA history, or at least any other season that we take seriously? It's not.
Well, guys, I hate Anthony Davis being the poster boy of hating on him in the bubble, because go back, watch the film of him in New Orleans in the playoffs. He's an absolute monster in the playoffs, and one of few guys who's never really underachieved in the playoffs once he's got there.
He won five total playoff games.
He underachieved in the regular season.
He won five playoff games in seven seasons.
So. Right. Look who was on his team.
This is the problem, though. Right? Like, Anthony Davis should be a top 5-6 player every single year. He's that good. He's that talented. We've hit him. We've seen him hit shots from absolutely everywhere. We've seen him lead the league in post-ups. We've seen him be a defensive player of the year candidate. There should be nothing that he can't do, but it just seems like the guy walks out there a lot, watches out there a lot. And can I swear on the spot? Should I not swear on the spot? I fucking hated when people talked about LeBron's killer instinct when he was young. It drove me crazy. I was like, he's making the smart basketball player. This is a stupid conversation. But like, for the first time in my entire life, I don't think I've said this about anyone else. Like, I just watch Anthony Davis sometimes. I'm like, man, this guy just does not want it. He just doesn't want it.
I would venture to say that you've said that about James Harden somewhere down the line.
search the tape. Look to the tape. I'm sure I called him fatter than Santa at least five times, but I don't think I ever said killer instinct. I didn't
look. I'll say this.
Want it.
I'll say this. Bigs in today's NBA, not even a player that can't generate offense on their own off the dribble is just inherently less valuable than players that can. So that's why Anthony Davis being a top five, top six guy, when it comes to numbers and when you factor in defensive impact, yes, of course. But when you get down to it, when you say, oh, Zach, the players on his team weren't good enough. I watched, you know what I'm going to say, but I watched James Harden win games. I watched James Harden go to a conference finals with, Pablo Prigioni? Like, come on. If you're that guy, you can at least win more than one playoff series, win more than five playoff games, you know?
Right, that's why he's never been that guy.
Well, but that's the thing. He needs someone to generate offense and help him off the dribble.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's just how it is with bigs.
But that's the thing, too, though, where I'm like, okay, if Anthony Davis was a go-get-it big, okay, and he was defensive player of the year quality big at one end, okay, awesome, makes your defense incredible, and he was just a go-get-it big on the possessions he wasn't involved or in the nights he was involved, he put 40 pounds on in LA all on his shoulders, and the guy can't go get offensive rebounds, get easy putbacks. Like, if he had that JV hustle, no one would complain, man. If you got 18 but you worked your ass off, no one would be mad about it. But it's just, there's a lot of watching him feel things out, be awkward, be stagnant, not go get it. That is so, I don't know, flabbergasting from a guy that talented.
Well, hey, that's also what makes Giannis Antetokounmpo so special is that, you know, and that's why the comparisons, I think, are just stupid. So with that said, do we talk about the Lakers, or Zach, do you have anything that you want to talk about?
I want to ask one more question. Yeah, I want to ask one more question on Cleveland. So if you had to pick one all-star, is it Garland or Allen? Because I truly think it's one of those situations, like Memphis last year, I thought Jonas Valanciunas was the most valuable guy and Ja Morant was the best player. I know some people hate that state of mind, but I think Jared Allen's the most valuable Cleveland Cavalier right now, and Darius Garland's the best player.
That's tough. I think Allen's got a better shot, and I think, especially with Bam missing all this time, like center in the East, there's an Randall falling down. I think front court East, there's this opportunity for him to get in. I don't know. I wouldn't fight you on that. I think they've been pretty close to impact, but there's a lot more guards in the East where I feel like it'll be tougher for Garland to slip in. Even just watching like Fred yesterday, Van Fleet in Toronto, I was like, I couldn't FVV or Garland this year is a tough call.
Maybe it'll come down to games played, but as far as bigs go, you got Giannis, you got maybe Vucevic, possibly. You got Embiid.
Vooch is out.
Yeah, Vooch is out. Yeah. Huh? I don't think Vooch will be in. I think
Sabonis has a better chance.
I was going to say Sabonis, but Embiid missed games too, so that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the criteria will be.
Can I throw one thing out here while you guys are thinking the next statement? I saw a tweet, Zach, that said Pat Beverly has completely changed the culture in Minnesota.
Fucking
and
right.
I was like, give me a break, man. Come on. I hate the word culture in the NBA more than anything. we just use it when it feels nice. Here's a win, it's culture. Oh, it's a loss, it's culture.
Look at this guy screaming after a dunk, culture.
I'm like, Jimmy Butler goes to Miami. He's the greatest culture guy of all time. Was he that in Minnesota? Hell no. And then like Rubio, Phoenix, Cleveland, amazing culture guy back in Minnesota. Nah, we're getting rid of him. Is it really Pat Bev?
So first of all, yeah, that's like a 6-part question there. Everybody who leaves Minnesota becomes legendary after you leave. I mean, it's just what happens. Rubio in Utah, Rubio back in Cleveland. Jimmy Butler, I mean, Jimmy was great wherever he went. I'm a huge Jimmy guy.
Hold on, I'm going to push you on this. Those are two guys. Who else?
Kevin Love turned into a winning player. David Ortiz, Doug Minkiewicz, any sport.
Don't go into baseball. Don't go into baseball.
Kevin Garnett became a champion. But Minnesota doesn't have many players. Look at Andrew Wiggins, prime example. Andrew Wiggins became a borderline all-star. He became a much different in the player we always needed.
Well, I think that is an actual product of real culture, Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
Well, is that a product of culture or role?
You're right. No, absolutely. I'll take that back. It's role. It's fit.
So, as for Pat Beverly, it's electric, man, and it's contagious. I mean, literally, our team. If you look at it on paper, nobody thinks this is a defensive constructed team. Like I would have said, we were going to be a top 7 offense before the year and a bottom 5 defense. That's what our team is built on. And then Jared Vanderbilt and Patrick Beverly, two all NBA defenders, have completely changed the culture because of their hustle and their grind. And it's like Tony Allen type shit.
Beverly is the quintessential example of a guy that like infuses a shitty team. You know, it's like you got some coaches that don't know how. I use this example all the time because it's the one that hits closest to home. The University of Texas basketball. They had a run in the. They had a ton, which was Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes didn't know what to do with top end talent. He made his name coaching, scrap it out, grind out games. But then once he got LaMarcus Aldridge, once he got Kevin Durant, he got these guys with high end talent that were high lottery picks. Texas didn't do anything because he didn't know what to do with them. And Pat Beverly's that kind of guy, right? Like he's gonna, when Houston was just building with Harden, he was really important for the Clippers, right? When he got traded
That's
over there
the
and they.
Example.
Yeah, they needed like to stay afloat and kind of get an identity. He was there. Now with the T-Wolves, right? A 500 under 500 team, like he's shining through. But you put Pat Beverly on an actually good team, and I just think he's just another guy that's like over there beating his chest, you know, honestly. He overplays on defense. He plays like really hard individual defense. He's the kind of guy that's going to foul you 3 times and get called for it every other time maybe. But he doesn't actually play intelligent defense. He doesn't play intelligent team defense, and he doesn't change a team's defensive scheme. That's my opinion, but I've seen a lot of Pat Beverly. So,
I mean, I think he is a part of why we changed our defensive scheme. I mean, yes, Vanderbilt more so, but
I think you finally just got some talent and they're starting to play well. That's,
that would have been if we were a great offense and we're just the last 3 games, the first games all year we've actually had a good offense. Like, we've been surviving off talent on that end, where defensively, it's literally been Pat Bev and Jared Vanderbilt making up for everybody else's holes, and D'Angelo Russell feeding off Pat Beverly's energy and getting in people's ass.
What were you saying, Josh?
I was just going to say, like, I'm sure Pat Beverly has been a positive impact influence player for that team. But, like, when I see stuff like, oh, he swung the culture, I'm like, you have a couple number one overall picks who are incredibly talented. You have McDaniels and Vanderbilt playing great defense. You have D'Lo in and out of the roster, but he's been a mostly positive factor there this year. Like, this team, like, regression of growth had to happen at some point. Like, when you're so bad forever and you continue to accumulate talent, like, unless you're the Kings, it's going to happen, man. Unless you're the Kings, eventually.
We're basically the Kings. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, guys. We're right there.
I've actually enjoyed this episode because instead of, like, kind of hitting the stereotypical, you know, oh, Phoenix, Golden State, we're kind of bouncing around doing some teams in limbo. And continuing with that theme, unless you guys have any input to the contrary, please feel free to let me know. I'm not glued to this topic, but I'm really interested in Portland. Anyone interested in Portland? Just how bad they are?
Well, as weird as the question. As weird as the question. No.
Well, they're 12-18, right? Yeah, just another team, kind of like the Mavs. They didn't make any splashes, and they desperately needed to because Damian Lillard's on his way out, or so we think, unless he keeps refuting every report and retweeting people. Yeah.
What's that quote? Like, the apology better be as loud as the disrespect.
That's it.
When Dame is traded this summer or before the deadline, and it's leaked that he wants out again and he is gone, he better tweet some apologies to all the reporters whose credibility he tried to, like, undermine, when pretty much anybody with an ear to the ground has heard similar. I've heard Dame has wanted out of Portland 3 separate times. I think it's pretty well known that he met with ownership to talked him out of it initially. There was talks 4 years ago now that he was going to end up with the Lakers after this deal. Like, there has been a lot, and specifically, I'm not saying Dame is leaking it. I'm not saying that Dame has, like, had his hand in it, but for him to be like, no one in my circle has said anything. Come on, man. Like,
I think
where there's smoke, there's fire. Someone is talking. Let's not pretend you haven't fantasized about winning somewhere else. It's happening. It's going to happen.
I agree, but I think it's smart that they are leaking these things for an unmotivated front office who's not doing jack shit for them.
What can they do, though? What can they do?
What can they do?
You
got to
try something, you know?
Here's something. At the end of the day, let me tell you, it doesn't matter who you put next to him, because his teams don't do well relative to what we consider to be real success, because he doesn't defend, and his teams don't defend, right? Portland has been a bottom five defensive team for I don't know how many years. They're always good at offense, and they go out and do what? They get Larry Nance, they trade for Covington last season. You know, like, guys that you think could at least improve a team defensive scheme. Covington's not a good, like, individual defender one-on-one with you know, players that are actually good, but he can help your weak side rotations and your scheme and all that kind of stuff. But they're the same team. Actually, they're worse than they've been, right? It just doesn't matter. You put a player, CJ McCollum's not a bona fide number two, but he should be better than, they should be better than 12-18. They're 2 games better than the Rockets. And the Rockets lost 15
motion
in a row.
Creates emotion. The front office just has to do anything. Like, and that is CJ and Nurk. Like, literally, if Dame saw him move somebody like that, I think he would go back to how good he was and be extremely motivated to be that dude again.
You know what?
Bring in defense. Like, this offseason,
they brought in Robert Covington, and he was like, I know. Good.
But, like, the guys that actually have any sort of value around the league, like, I truly think this offseason, before Malcolm Brogdon signed an extension, like, I think him and Miles Turner, if you could find a way to get them, either one of them would have been a big upgrade from the defensive perspective in Portland, and you wouldn't miss a beat with what CJ McCollum gave you.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is it doesn't matter, because your point of attack defender is Damian Lillard.
Well, Littles coming
on.
But that's the thing. You could hide Dame if his running mate wasn't CJ. So no matter what, you have a small ball guard out there trying to run champion that D. It's not. But here, there's so many things with this. Okay, Portland fans were so arrogant 4 or 5 years ago when people were like, "Oh, this team might never have a championship." Oh, this is fun. It's fun. Who cares? We're just a good basketball team. CJ McCollum had a real value 3 or 4 years ago. People saw him. There were conversations like maybe he's better than Dame. Like Dame missed 18 games in 2018 or something like that. They went like, I don't know, 12-6. I don't remember what the record was. People were like, CJ McCollum might be better than Dame. There was real value. There was a real opportunity to do something. In 2019, the stars aligned. The stars aligned. They got a perfect seeding. They got Denver. They get to go against Golden State without Kevin Durant. I was in the building, man. Like without KD, you couldn't get a game. You couldn't get a game. Like you couldn't get one game with Kevin Durant not playing basketball for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
That was the moment where you should have been like, there is no chance. We just got the best possible scenario. This team can never do it. And they didn't make a move. And they took their time and they wrung their hands. And now they're done. And I think on the Dame front, to your point, like, is he going to go, if he got traded to Philadelphia right now, do I think he brings another level of energy than we've seen this season? For sure. But at the same time, like, we've seen a lot of small guards age out quicker than you think. And, like, I think Steph has got to skirt past that because he's Steph Curry and he's the greatest shooter of all time. But I don't know. Look at, like, Iverson. Look at Starbury. Look at all these. Now you got Dame. He's getting up there. Maybe he's just not. Maybe just not what the rule change is ever going to be what he was, too.
Yeah.
He dropped 43-8 the other night, guys.
Yeah, but he's averaging 23 points a game, which is the worst he's averaged since 2014, 2015. I have to imagine the rule changes have something to do with it. And maybe also, like Josh is indicating, maybe he's just, you know, a smaller guard that's starting to decline to some degree. His percentages are awful. I think he's going to hit, one of those stretches where he goes crazy and evens these numbers out somewhat. But even after these numbers even out, they're going to be worse than they've been over the last 2 or 3 years. But I agree with you. When they had
worst shooting numbers of his career, it's the worst shooting of his career by a hefty margin.
Yeah. And he's playing the second most minutes, I think, ever since his rookie season. 36.4 minutes per game. Rookie season played 38.6 minutes per game. 17-18, he played 36.6 minutes per game. Fourth most, sorry. 2019 to 20, 37.5. So in a what, you know, I don't know, 9-10 year career, he's playing the fourth most minutes per game and he's shooting the worst, scoring the lowest in almost a decade. Like, I think there's real cause for concern. I think the year where they went to the Western Conference Finals and it didn't work out and they couldn't even get a game. I agree with Josh actually, because that was it. That's like, okay, this doesn't work. You got to switch it up. Like the archetype for a Damian Lillard led team needs to change ASAP. CJ still has value. He no longer does at that level. Maybe you go get Ben Simmons. I don't really know what Ben Simmons is going to do on a Dame team, honestly.
And I think that would be done already if
Philly wanted it.
Either side wanted it, really, to be honest. Like, I think they could have done McCollum and Little on picks if they wanted it. Or I don't think either side really likes it. Neither side's really excited about it.
Yeah, and then what? Neil Olshey was out. Portland's got some serious, I think, dysfunction.
Stotts is out.
Huh?
And then Stotts is out, and you have the whole Billups.
Stotts is out, yeah. And even that, I think Terry Stotts is a pretty good coach. I just think it was a defensive personnel issue. I think that's been obvious. They have not had the personnel. They have not been good defensively. They needed a complete makeover. And now they're only two games better than the Rockets that lost 15 in a row. Pretty sad, to be honest.
And I always said Anthony Simons was the next in line where he could have made up for CJ if he would have went out and got defense.
Well, they traded for Norm Powell, right? Who's just another classic, like, offensive guy, shoots. Like, they go all in on this
positive defender, I'd say.
Yeah, he's like, Norm's an okay player, but Norm's an okay player like Tim Hardaway Jr. is an okay player.
Right.
Like, if you have two ballers, then yeah, he can be your third guy. If not, you're looking hungry at that wing.
Who are you guys more worried about, Dame or AD going forward?
It's a good question.
Dame.
I don't know.
Dame? I think AD is what, 5 years younger for one. And then on the other end,
31 versus 27.
I think AD is 28. Is 27?
3 years.
3 years.
But on top of that, like, I've seen AD play basketball like he doesn't want to play basketball and still be a top 20 player. So I think impact wise, I think AD is a lot safer bet.
I also think AD's got a better situation, right? If he just comes back healthy, they can still make a run, make a push. Portland is.
Year, for sure.
I think Portland's hopeless. And we'll finish with that, which is always a hot topic, but I guess for good reason. What do we think of the Lakers? What's going on with the Lakers? Josh?
What isn't going on with the Lakers? I was doing, I think it was Mad Dog I was doing a bit last night, and they were like, are they going to be better in the playoffs or worse in the playoffs? I don't know, man. I don't know what they're going to do, because I would not be shocked if their offense actually improved for a month here. Not because AD's been that bad. He hasn't, like, historically bad jump shooting season. Still does a lot for them. He's still a good post operator. But
here comes the IT love. Let's go.
They're just going to clear space. They're just going to be so much more space. Like, him and Russ together are anchors on an offense. And I think with him gone, they're going to be open some things up. LeBron is going to play a lot of five, which offensively I think is great for them. You're going to be able to put some more shooting on the floor. You're going to open up driving lanes for him and Russ. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if their offense is way better. And then at the other end, their defense is going to be way worse. Their defense is going to be bad. And then they're going to adjust and they're going to find their groove and watch the Lakers win like six games in a row. And then Anthony Davis is going to come back and they're going to be like, okay, we got to play slower again. We got to move the ball more because we can't just drive and kick anymore because AD's in the post. And then they're going to have to find themselves in that next 6 weeks before the playoffs. And they're just this. Stop me if you've heard this before, because I'm sure we've heard this before. But a LeBron James team, a Lakers team, it's going to be a roller coaster all year long. I don't know how they get to any sort of like centered, this is who we are, this is how we play with the personnel that they have. And I swear to God, if one more person tells me Trevor Ariza is the key, I'm going to just jump out a window.
Yet another link to the Houston Rockets, of course.
Yeah.
Zach, what do you think?
I'm with Josh. I think LeBron's playing good enough to win a few more games. It's just, what is the rest of the team going to do? I'm really concerned about them. I think they're a team that almost has to make a move, but I don't think they have a move to make. Like, I think it's really hard. This is what it is. I'm not blaming Russ either. I don't think Russ is to blame. It was just such an embarrassing performance against Minnesota on Friday. And that, I mean, it was just weird to see that LeBron was just really worthless that whole game. And he made a couple shots to get his stats up at the end of the game when it didn't matter. But I don't know if you can't compete with Minnesota like that, that's always a scary sign. I don't know where they're going to get any production from, honestly. And I think they have to find a way to finish in the top six in order to do anything in the playoffs. So this could be a really testing time without Anthony Davis, especially with the teams below him in the West fighting and coming along here. So I don't know. This could be really bad times for the Lakerland, and I'm not really optimistic about it.
Let me ask you this. If they do what Josh said and they AD's out, they rattle off six in a row, they start to look like a decent basketball team, how quickly do we get to trade Anthony Davis talks?
It's been trending on Twitter on and off the last few days.
That is dumb shit.
It's been trending on Twitter the last few days.
I'm just saying. But like, would you even go down that hole? No way.
Very quietly, I would. Very quietly, if I was Rob Pelinka, I would.
Let's hear it.
You can't get anything for Russell Westbrook. You can't.
Right.
Like, you can't. You're not going to trade LeBron James. So, like, with the utmost emphasis on being quiet and keeping that circle tight, I would begin to just mumble and see what's available. If not for this deadline for the summer, just to see if I have options, just to see what else is out there.
So fantasy trade scenarios are not my jam, but they are both of your collective jams. So some fantasy trade scenarios for AD, throw them out.
Josh, you started this. I got some thoughts, obviously, but.
Well, I was just laughing because I was playing with the trade NBA, the Tradespo tool, the one day. Zach and I both love it. Yeah.
Yeah, y'all do this all day, man. I like to watch and like talk about what's happening. I don't sit there and do that. I used to do that back in the day, but this is y'all's jam. So take it away.
Okay, Lakers fans have been mad at who they had to play at center all year. When AD's at center, he doesn't like it. They can't play DJ. They can't play Dwight. I'm just saying, Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis for AD works money wise straight across. You can have both.
That would be really interesting.
I mean, I don't know how Westbrook fits with that, of course, but.
Yeah,
I mean, yes, picks across. Would have to be coming to the Lakers.
They're... But look, man, sorry, man. I was just gonna say, like, here's the thing. Like, I was joking with that, but if I was gonna do it, like, LeBron played his best basketball with a secondary scorer who could create when he was taking a break. Like, Kyrie was the best teammate for LeBron that LeBron has ever had. It's too bad that their heads did not get on the way that
No, I disagree.
You disagree with this?
No, I disagree with the assertion you just made about Kyrie being the second best teammate he had.
No, I said he's the best teammate he's had.
Or being, sorry. Yes. Yeah. I disagree with him being the best teammate. I think prime Dwayne Wade.
But he didn't get prime Dwayne Wade. That's the thing. Like
he did those first 2 years.
A little bit.
2011 Wade was like maybe still in his prime. And then after that, it wasn't.
I think he got him for like 70% of that year. He wasn't 100%, 100%.
I think he got him for those first 2 years.
I don't even think 2012 is.
But we don't got time to go down that. But I think AD has a case the year they won. Sure.
But I'm saying get him a secondary playmaker that can score and like create space for others. Like, and the thing was the Dame was the guy. I was like, if there is a situation down the line where they could add Dame to the Lakers or Dame and whoever for AD or something like that. But the way that Dame's played this year, I would no longer be interested in that route. So I don't like they're in a tough situation. I was thinking about Westbrook trades too. Russ or KP, who would you rather have on your team right now?
Oh, Russ.
Russ?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the composition of the team.
But I'm still taking Russ. It's the contract. It comes down to that.
They each have 1 year left after, I think, right?
But you know what I think is interesting?
That's one where no one would be happy. Everyone would just be mad.
Yeah, especially if we're talking about Russ on the Mavs with Luka, that I think that would be a disaster specifically. But
for sure.
What I think is interesting about this discussion is we used to be in a place where it was, you know, just give LeBron anyone that is all-star level talent and they're going to the finals. And now it's like, I'm kind of struggling to find at least realistic fits that you could, you know, of star level talent that you could pair with LeBron at this stage, that would be an automatic lock. That would be automatic.
He still is 11-6 when he plays this year. Okay. He's 11-6 when he plays this year. Yes. I know he's only
against who though? Against who though?
But that's the thing. The last 3 weeks, LeBron has been awesome. Yes, he's been really good. But to Rush's point, like that is that like there was a 12-year period where you're like, if LeBron has anybody, they're a threat. And right now he has AD and Russ, and we're like, I don't know if the Lakers are winning around in the playoffs.
What about AD for Jaylen Brown?
I think that makes the Lakers better.
Oh my God! Wow.
This Celtics version,
Celtics fans are going to be pulling the wackest receipts when they were like, Jaylen Brown was like a rookie, and they're like, I wouldn't trade Jaylen Brown for AD. And they just fluked into this being right. Like, what a. I think I'd want more as the Lakers, and I think
you'd get a little more.
But man, I would rather have another wing than a big right now. So I don't know.
I mean,
I want to point out that two of those wins that the Lakers got with LeBron playing were against the Rockets. Okay. And one of them, they almost lost at the buzzer. And
you were telling me they were the hottest team in the league. You were telling me they're the hottest
they
team
were.
In the league.
They were.
Who was the hottest team in the league?
Your Rockets.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, they are. But yeah. This was back when like they were losing 15 in a row. So, and one of those was, the Lakers won by two and almost lost on a buzzer beater. So two of those are against the Rockets. One of them is against the Pistons. One of them is against the Thunder. One of them is against the Magic. So I'm just saying.
And the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying. And like, and all that being said, it's 11-6, right? It's not
and
like.
The Mavs, oh, Luka. Yeah. They haven't beat anybody good.
Yeah. Or they're like 13-4, but like 11-6. Like, so I don't know. But I will say that I think that they would be better spread out. I think the issue, though, like you alluded to, is that they get worse on defense, especially because that's the thing with LeBron right now. Is he still capable of putting up 30, 10, and 10 on any given night if he wants to? Yes. Is he walking on defense? A lot. And it's just...
Can we agree, though, that this isn't Frank Vogel's fault, despite every Lakers loss? Like, yes. Well, how is this Frank Vogel's fault? What is he? He had the number one defense without AD and LeBron. He had all defensive personnel. He's like, I can do this. I can map. This is what I do. But like, we're going to get rid of everyone on this team who can defend, except for Kent Bazemore and Avery Bradley, who do nothing on offense. Make it work.
Yeah, it's a LeBron team. It's the LeBron approach backfiring, right? Like the, okay, this isn't working, wholesale swap.
But it's not a LeBron team, though. Like, he had his hand in this. I know what you're saying. Like, he had his hand in this. The report that he kind of nixed the buddy deal for the Westbrook deal. So, like, he definitely, but this isn't like a, it's not a type of team that we've seen LeBron be successful with. This isn't like 3-and-D. This is tons of creation and clogged paints and like I don't know. This is like the LeBron Friends Network Club. This isn't a LeBron
team. Well, that's what I'm saying, though, right? Is I'm not saying like the archetype for a LeBron championship team. I'm just saying the LeBron approach of like, okay, we got bounced in the first round. I'm embarrassed. Wholesale swap. Like, everything's got to change. Let's do it. And the whole Westbrook thing, I think, obviously, it was very directly his call saying, you know, I need someone that can carry the engine, or that can be the engine while I'm out, or while I'm trying to load manage. And obviously, I don't know why he thought Westbrook would be that guy. And this isn't Westbrook's fault, but he's just not that guy. You know, even in those games, like he's you want to talk about a roller coaster. A Russell Westbrook led team is a roller coaster. And, we're seeing the Lakers kind of do that. But in wrapping up, any final questions or final thoughts that you have, Zach?
If there's one more team everybody should be worried about that's in panic mode right now that needs a roster move or any type of move firing, who would be the number one panic mode team? Real quick, we'll get you out of here, Josh.
Philly, which Ross Roosh didn't bring this up because we have $100 riding on Ben never getting in that uniform.
50. We have 50.
Is it 50? Okay.
It's 50. I'm anticipating I will be losing that 50. Well, real quick, give me your Ben Simmons talk, and then we can let you get out of here.
I think that at this point, like, is Philly really willing to sacrifice a healthy Embiid year? Like, I understand. I understand the precedence, and I agree. This is totally unfair from a league standpoint that players can do this in a long-term deal because it's going to cripple their window. You know, they have a contract honor. But does Philly want to keep playing chicken because they're not just in the play-in, like they're on the cusp of not being in the playoffs. They're like a win out of not being in the playoffs at all. And Embiid's prime is going to be, like, I don't want to say it's going to be short. I don't want to doom him, but like every year he's in uniform, you should be trying to win. Maxey's had a huge jump. I don't know what they're doing. Like, I don't know what the standoff is going to lead to. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, at this point, it's bittersweet because I like Daryl Morey, but it's also hilarious that he left. Like, he jumped ship before the Harden catastrophe, knowing full and well that it was coming. And he walked right into, I think, an even worse situation. I think the Ben Simmons situation is worse than the Harden situation, because at least the Harden situation came to a resolution fairly quickly, right? Like the strip club stuff happened in November. He was traded January 13th, couple months, whatever. They got the compensation. They were able to move on, get the lotto pick, and like kind of, you know, refine themselves and their identity and their path. Philly's in limbo, you know? And like you said, they have one of the best players in the league who's in his prime, and we don't know how much longer that prime is going to last. You got some ancillary players playing pretty well. Seth Curry's having a badass season. Tyrese Maxey's making a leap. Like, they've got talent there. They're just missing the one guy that kind of made it all work. Also, though, to be fair, they are 15 and 15, partially due to Embiid missing games because of, I think, the COVID protocol, right? He missed like eight or nine or something games.
Yeah, 12 games.
So 12 games. So that's got a lot to do with it as well. But, now, I mean, they're in a worse situation. Like, they got to capitalize on this. No one's budging. The asking price is reportedly, I think, astronomically high, unrealistically high. And if you come down from that, you look like a jackass. If you give into it, you look like a jackass. So I don't really know.
They'll never move them at that point, though. Like, all of the deals that have been reported, like, they're just so far away from what I think anyone's actually. And this is the other thing that made the Harden situation better, to your point, if he stayed in Houston. Like, Harden could go to Mars and open the first ever strip club on Mars, and no one would know where he is, and people still want him because he's that talented and we know what he can do. Whereas like Simmons, you're like, if we trade for him, he is talented. He can do a lot of things defensively, but we have to change how we play. We have to like totally think about this really hard before we bring that guy in. Whereas like Harden, you could have done no matter what. So I don't think the waiting game is going to play out. Like, no one's going to be like, wow, we've thought about it for 6 months. We've had 87 calls with you where you nickel and dimed us, but now we're going to give you everything you wanted. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I hope it does for the league, for better, and for maybe Minnesota getting better as well. Fingers crossed, but my wife has got to get to Pilates. Josh has to get to Spotify Green Room. It's great catching up, my man. Keep engaging, keep doing what you do, and talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Josh. Best of luck with your fantasy squad.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Later. Oops.